Folks, you're listening to Chew the Fat with Chef Craig here in the beautiful studios of the Charlottesville Radio Group. And of course, we're in Charlottesville. That would make sense, wouldn't it? We're with the Charlottesville Radio Group. Anyway, we're with Mike Bisegli, our producer, Craig Hartman, your host. And tonight we're going to have what I'm going to call one of the young gun chefs of Charlottesville. You like that, Justin?
I do.
The young gun chefs of Charlottesville. And remember, Chew the Fat is the podcast where you get the unedited, raw interviews with local food personalities. We learn what makes them tick. We figure out afterwards whether we like them or whether we don't like them. And also, hopefully, after you hear from them and you go to eat at their restaurants, you're going to be able to look at that plate of food in a different way and understand really what it is that's on that plate. Because it's oftentimes more than you think. And today we have Justin Hershey. He is the chef for Zinc on Main Street, Charlottesville. The restaurant's got a lot of good accolades. The food is beautiful. The food is tasty. It's relevant with the times, which is what's really cool about it. And, you know, it's one of the places that in Charlottesville we can be proud to say that we're a restaurant town. Justin's different than some of the other chefs that you'll have here in town. He actually hails from California originally. We're going to hear all about his background and how he ended up here in Charlottesville. So without further ado, Justin, how was your night at down at Zinc?
It was good. It was good.
You guys busy?
Yeah, it was all right. Not too crazy. I spent a lot of time trying to actually work out some kinks. And work on some new dishes for the spring. So had a good time doing that. Spent a lot of time on the phone trying to source. Outside of that, talked to a lot of guests. Broke down a lot of meat.
Nice. Nice. So do you do all the butchering there? Are you the butcher man?
For the most part. As far as breaking down larger animals, I certainly am. We kind of take pride in breaking down our own whole pork and whole lamb. And anything from there down. I have some of the guys do a lot of the game and poultry butchery, but as far as like pork and lamb, it's all me.
Yeah, well, you know, you're the chef there, so you get to pick and choose
right.
What you like to do, right? So is that like right. One of your favorite things? You into that?
Oh, yeah, I'm totally into butchery. I think it's one of those lost things, you know, people are definitely adopting again. There for a while, you know, everybody was... doing just like the prepackaged prime cuts and stuff like that. As far as like everybody getting to nose to tail and stuff like that, it became a much more popular thing. As far as like price point is concerned, I mean, you can get a whole animal a much better price also. And as far as the skill and the craft of cookery, I mean, it takes it to a new level.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. I remember, look, I, you know, being a chef and everything, I remember the first time people... would talk to me about their local meats, and they say, yeah, you know, I have lamb, and I'd be like, well, can I get racks? Like, well, no, you got to buy the whole lamb. And I'm like, what the heck am I going to do with that? You know, so it's really cool for me now to see how culinary has evolved. I mean, it's become, it's getting better and better. So for instance, I understand, and I read that you actually raised some of your own hogs.
Yeah, we did. One of our guys on the line there for a little bit, relocated out of Pocosin, actually, and he ended up here. He rented an 86-acre farm in which he had, you know, a little house and everything like that.
Right.
And part of his whole gig is, you know, he had to take care of the land, and then started working at Zinc and saw that we were really into, like, the whole farm-to-table thing, and he was really interested in husbandry and proteins and stuff like that. And we just thought up this crazy idea, like, why don't we do it? So he went to his landlord, asked her, you know, it would be cool. There was a standing barn, you know, on the land that wasn't being utilized, and she was totally open to it, you know. And so we bought a couple Duroc's, we bought about 30 chickens and raised them on the land.
Yeah.
Did everything ourselves, you know. It was kind of funny, one of his neighbors actually grew up raising hogs,
right?
With his father, so they had a good relationship, you know. Drink a case of beer, come over, talk about hogs.
A case of beer?
He was high functioning.
You guys are much better than
I
am.
Yeah, he was high functioning.
Two beers, I'm done, man.
Anyways, like, we started raising two Duroc hogs, and raised our chickens and did everything ourselves.
Yeah.
Took them down, got them cleaned. I had a farmer who was on a small farm exemption. She had all the machinery and stuff like that. She was producing, you know, 1,000 or less chickens for sale. So she had all the machinery and stuff like that exempt. Cleaned all her chickens there. Cleaned her hogs and everything like that. It was a great experience. Saw them, you know, from being piglets all the way through their lives, you know. Fed them the good stuff. Ate a lot of ABC Red, a lot of milk. And then for a while, we're actually feeding them our vegetable scraps and stuff like that. And we're wondering, like in our back of our heads, we're like, why are these guys like not putting on weight? And we started thinking about what we're feeding them.
Yeah, sure,
It was just kind of like, these guys are vegetarians. You know? Like, they're like,
lean, baby. Yeah. They're lean. Yeah. Well, I gotta tell you, back in the day, we used to take, when I worked in Pinehurst Hotel, we used to scrape all the plates and take any leftover soups and food that was gone bad, dump it into a bin, and it would be nasty, bubbling, and the farmer would come get it. He would boil that for hours and then strain it and feed the pigs.
That's awesome.
And I swear I could taste that when I was eating that pork. So I'm appreciative of what you were doing. Let me ask you a question now. That had to be a pretty cool experience, because now when you buy a hog from someone or you're serving meat, do you feel a little bit different about that meat and really what went into it in the production of it?
Oh, absolutely. I remember when we brought down our first hog, we actually threw a pig roast for the staff at the restaurant, and then Edible Blue Ridge came out, and you know they were running a story on it, and we had friends and supporters of us come out, and I remember hearing the news, you know, that I wasn't actually there for the slaughter of that one. I just did the butchery of it. So I remember hearing the news, you know, we actually named him. We actually got some flack for this, and I was just kind of like, that's absurd.
You named him.
You know, yeah, we named him. You know, like, you're staring at two pigs in a barn, you know, a few hours out of the day. You're going to call him something.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
And it's not like, if anything, I think it's acceptable, you know, and I think it's even brings that kind of relationship a little bit closer,
right?
You know, as far as respect and everything like that. But I remember Jarrett coming through the door and being like, "Yeah, we put down Wiggles," and you know, my stomach kind of drops because, you know, like, I knew that pig a little bit.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like we
right.
spent some time. You know, like it was kind of a strange feeling, you know, stuff like that. But it definitely brings you closer, you know, to the animals. And I mean, what we were trying to really get at is, you know, doing a humane husbandry and like really identifying with that and how felt about it. It totally, like whenever we get any product from our farmers, we treat it with the utmost respect, you know. It's hard, you know, like I remember I never killed something myself, you know. I was used to cleaning, you know, I've cleaned thousands of animals.
Right.
But like when, you know, we went and cleaned our chickens, you know, I had to pull the knife across its throat. You know, it's a different experience. Totally different.
Sure.
You know, you're not going to waste that.
Yeah, right. Right. Absolutely. Yeah, because I think that's an amazing experience. Not only for you as the chef, but then your people who work with you, because they look at now, they when they get some meat in there or any protein or vegetables or whatever, they're looking at it in a way that says, you know, I got to treat this thing with respect, and I can't waste an ounce. And you know, I think every cook should have to go through that. I think that's really cool. I appreciate you. You know, I appreciate what you did there.
Yeah. Oh.
So tell me a little bit about you. What define Justin Hershey? It's a good last name, by the way. I thought you'd be a pastry chef, but
No. That's actually a adopted name.
Is it?
Yeah, I kind of lost my name there when I was about 5 or 6 years old, and changed over to Justin Daniel Hershey, a little bit more gringo.
Right. So what was the birth name?
Manuel Burquez Padron. Junior.
Padron. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Padron. But
mine was Magoon Pinheiro.
That's a good one.
Irish, Scottish, and Puerto Ricano.
Oh, nice.
So hey, we're in the same boat. That's cool.
Yeah, right on.
I like that. I like that. So far, Justin is my favorite chef that I've interviewed. No, I'm just kidding, guys. Anyway, no, define yourself. If you could say, you know, this is who I am, this is why I do what I do. What would you say to people?
This is who I am. This is what I do.
Now, why are you a chef? Why are you?
Well, it's kind of funny, like how I ended up to be like through my experiences, my life experience growing up and everything like that. How I was raised and everything. It was really old school, you know, like very much about pride, cleanliness. It was always constructive, you know, like
sure.
I was one of those kids that. Total introvert. Like I'd go in the corner and play with Legos for like the next 8 hours. And I loved constructing things, and I loved building things. And one of the reasons I really stuck with with cooking and stuff like that is because it is about constructing things.
Yeah.
It is about taking ingredients or a product and making something. You
mm-hmm.
know, you have
yeah,
a
sure.
vision in your mind. You go at it, and then at the end of the day, you know you. You accomplish something and it gives you a great sense of completion.
Sure.
That was something that it really spoke to me in food and cuisine. And it's a very long story about how everything came to.
Sure.
I mean, a lot of different experiences that I actually had. I mean, I grew up wanting to be a fighter pilot. And, you know, I was born in... you know, the mid-80s and Top Gun, and my mom
right.
was young, and, you know, I grew up in a military family, and, you know, that was cool, and, you know, my uncle, who's basically raised me half my life, you know, he was in the Strategic Air Command, and, you know, I had a flight suit and a bomber jacket when I was 5 years old.
Right.
You know, I was raised in yeah. like this whole entire, you know, social, you know, kind of realm, and, I wanted to be a fighter pilot, and then after that, I wanted to, wanted to work with computers, and I was like, well, that's kind of boring. I was good at it, you know, I was constructing
yeah,
and doing numbers.
That's two opposite
science.
Things. You got adrenaline, and then...
I wanted to be a fighter or a firefighter for a little bit.
Yeah.
And just had, like, this weird thing going on, you know. And then, like, I came across food, and I was just kind of like, it stuck. It was strange... how it happened. I mean, I remember I ate at a restaurant. I was like maybe 8 years old. We were eating at some like podunk restaurant, and they had basically one of the coolest kitchen subs I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It was basically like in the middle, there's an island, and there was like at least 16 burners.
Right.
But instead of having, you know, one person on the side like working a range, I had two guys, one on one side and one on the other, and they're cooking, you know, facing each other.
Right.
And there's like flames, like, you know, like the kitchen door is open, and there's like flames, like, 5 feet in there. I'm like, holy shit. Like, that looks awesome, you know? Like, and I, like, I
that's
ate my
the adrenaline.
And I was like, that's so cool, you know?
Yeah.
And I always kind of, like, had this, like, my grandmother would cook and stuff like that. She would never let me cook because she was always worried that I'd pull a pot down on myself.
Yeah,
but I always was, like, that kid that wanted help and stuff like that and help cook. And once I actually got up on the stove and stuff like that, I was really interested in it. And it just kind of like, it kind of grew and kind of like, I fell into like this, you know, working at, you know, a casual grill or whatever.
Sure.
And, you know, the biggest thing I fell in love with at the time was the lifestyle.
Right.
You know, like, it's a party, you know, like, I wanted to be a rock star
yeah,
there for
yeah.
a little bit too. And I was like, well, I can't keep rhythm. You know, I played the drums throughout middle school, but actually trying to play a kit, I couldn't save my life. You know, I really wanted to be a rock star and stuff like that. It didn't quite work out for me. But you somewhat, you know, I fell into the whole restaurant, you know, scene. And it kind of seemed like it mirrored
yeah,
a
true.
Bit.
I'm with you on that.
You know,
well, you
like,
had, look, you ended up with the adrenaline from the, you know, from the fighter pilot thing, you know,
yeah,
being
yeah.
on the line.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you end up with, you know, having a vision and being able to put things together, construct things. And you know, so you ended up probably, you know, the whole rock star thing, you know, chefs, you know, chefs can get kind of a big head sometime and actually
yeah.
think they're more of a rock star than they actually are. Actually, you know, yesterday I saw the Iron Maiden jet in San Juan Airport, which was really cool. That's just a side thing. Now back to Justin Hershey. So here you are. You're in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Yeah.
And you're at Zinc.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about what your heart is, you know, at Zinc, where your vision comes into Zinc and how it plays out there.
Well, the whole vision of Zinc is kind of like to offer local and delicious food as much as possible at a good price point.
Sure.
And make it accessible to more people than some of these other places that you're paying for tablecloths and whatnot.
Right.
We really don't want to carry a pretension about us. We want people to come in our dining room and really just let loose and have mm-hmm. fun with us. You know, we want to share. We want them to catch the fever, basically. You know,
right.
Just have a great time. We want to entertain you, feed you, show you some great stuff, and that's what we're really trying to do. Zinc's been through, you know, multiple stages. I've been the chef there. Let's see, next month will be a year.
Right.
And I came from the Stanton Grocery, which was basically a very strong farm-to-table concept, and that's
sure.
where I really fell in love with that. And part of the reason was the relationships.
Right.
The relationships that they had with the people producing the food was so interesting to me. It's a completely different aspect. Moved away from cookery, you know, like these people are on the other end. They're nurturing and growing the food, and they know it in a completely different sense than we do.
Sure.
So, like, that was something that really stuck, you know, to me. Other than, you know, all the other reasons why, as far as health reasons, that you should support local food, and that's something that. When I first took the job at Zinc, Vu was really interested in, and you know, I had a laundry list of purveyors, and we started there, started sourcing a little bit more locally, and then started getting away from the French bistro,
right,
and kind of grew into this more American progressive. We tried to source as much as we can locally and regionally,
right,
have as much reflection as we can on the terroir. And give the people that grow the food as much recognition as we can.
Yeah.
And those relationships have been awesome. You know, talking to these people and actually knowing food on a different aspect has been more rewarding than just sitting there cooking.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Who are some of your favorite producers right now? People that you've enjoyed?
I would have to say Free Union Grass Farm. They're mm-hmm. young, just like I am, kicking off. They have great energy. They're doing an awesome thing. They're actually going to be doing ducks,
right?
Which is really big. I love ducks.
Yeah,
I'm sure
too.
You love ducks too.
Me too.
So they're going to be doing ducks, and I was like, "Holy moly, that's awesome!" You know, I had some ducks coming from the Stanton area, and I'm really excited to be able to get it a little bit closer.
Right.
And Free Union's awesome. Janet's Garden. She does milk-fed chickens.
Wow.
Which is great. She has dairy cows, not really enough to go in full production, but she takes her milk and she puts it out in the field. And then through the heat and everything, it curdles. And then it attracts bugs. And the chickens eat the curds and they eat the bugs that the milk's
interesting.
Attracting. Yeah, and that product is ridiculously good.
Wow.
Yeah, and I have to say, hey, Janet. I'm getting some sunchokes from her, actually, next week. She's great.
I'm going to have to come try that chicken, actually. I'm pretty interested in that.
Yeah,
that sounds pretty cool.
I mean, it's nothing crazy as far as a heritage breed. It's a Cornish cross, you know, your average
yeah, sure.
bird. But that lady picks up her chickens every day and kisses them.
Yeah.
It's like it's a completely different product. It's amazing.
Right.
And aside from that, you know, like we just have we deal a lot with the local food hub with
sure.
Kate and them and Alan Moore, and through them, you know, everything's kind of like funneled in, and it's actually a great convenience for us because trying to keep a laundry list of purveyors and trying to keep up when everything's going to be delivered
sure.
and stuff like that really works. It's a great convenience for me. I hate saying convenience, but it's a convenience that is in a positive way, you know.
No, I'd say there's nothing wrong with convenience as long as...
it's responsible.
Yeah,
with integrity.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it is responsible and it is with integrity.
But, you know, it actually, if someone like that wasn't actually providing a service to you, it would be a little harder to use them. You know,
yeah,
back in the day when I first went to the Outer Banks in North Carolina, I used to buy produce from a guy in Washington, D.C., and he used to wrap it, shrink wrap it in boxes and put it on the the Greyhound bus. Mm-hmm. And if I wasn't at the Exxon in Southern Shores at 8 o'clock, that bus kept going and I had to drive it down the beach to catch it because we could not get good produce. So this is amazing to me, you know,
it's
to hear you talk
where,
about these places and you say convenience. Well, that's a big deal because now, you know, you have these people here actually providing a really cool service to you as the chef. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty progressive, you know, throughout the United States. You know, you take places like New York, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., you know, Chicago, L.A. You know, they have a pretty cool scene like that. But Charlottesville's right there with them. And you know, we might even have some cooler producers around
here.
Well,
what's really awesome is that right now Virginia's really being put on the map as far as the East Coast. You know, you have New York and the larger Atlanta, Charleston. All these places are sourcing from Virginia farms right now. You know, there's something really exciting happening in Virginia as far as our purveyors.
True enough.
And to everybody out there, you know, we might be taking it for granted almost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if all these other larger markets are like, this is the stuff.
Right.
You know, maybe we should take a second look at it and like really savor it and support it so it doesn't get outsourced, you know.
True enough. Yeah, you want to make sure that you know that you hold on to it. But you know what? A good thing happens and people want to get in there. You know, it might look. I think the main thing we want those farmers to make a living.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's going to be huge. And if they can keep going, then we're in the right place. And I think that's pretty cool. What are you working on right now, spring wise? Anything that's exciting that you've come up with it, and then tell me, how do you actually, where does the inspiration come from for you when you're working on dishes?
Well, as far as like what's happening now is we're basically gathering the raw resources to build our flavor profiles. And it just, you know, like spring hits and everybody out there expects spring food to be on the menu. It doesn't quite happen like that. You know, the warm weather hits. And then the plants start growing.
Right. Yeah.
And then we wait for them to mature their fruit. And then we get them, and then we put them on the menu. So coming up actually this week is when some of our menu will actually start flipping. And I know we've had an A-frame out on the streets, like new spring menu coming, you know, once the sun started hitting. And everybody's been waiting for it. But today was my first real taste. I got some morel mushrooms in today, actually just a freak phone call. Through networking, somebody just called me up and was like, hey, I heard you guys want some morels. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah,
totally. And it's actually at a good price, you know.
And they're from a forager, local forager here?
Yep.
Yeah, don't forget to rinse them real good in Virginia. I one time served a bunch of morel soup that I made that had a lot of ants in it. Those of you who ate at Clifton Inn, it was an extra protein, but I threw a lot of herbs in there so that you couldn't see. So, you know, it's something you learn because, you know, the West Coast morels, right?
Yeah.
They're real clean, but here they have a lot of insects.
Well, I actually have a great story. I'm scared of bugs. I am petrified of bugs. I was at the grocery once and we had somebody come through with some morels and they were big. They were huge.
Yeah.
I cut one of those suckers open, and there's a spider in that thing, a big furry spider. It's probably about the size of a quarter.
Yeah.
And I seriously almost shat my pants. Like, I was running around like, somebody kill this thing. I don't know what to do. Like, yeah. So I know, like, we got it.
Yeah, I learned.
I'm not going to dip them in bleach or anything, but they will be clean.
Yeah. No, you don't have to dip, you know, salt water.
Yeah.
Salt water, and they all leave, so which is pretty cool. But it's nice to have the morels here.
Yeah.
And so what do you think about inspiration? When you, you know, because, you know, I've talked to different people. Some people say, you know, I'm in the shower and I'm thinking, you know, and all of a sudden it all comes to me. Or is it, you know, another person that I read a lot or, I fly to Europe and I eat? Or, you know, what do you do? Where do you draw, you know, to come in with, you know, what you're coming up with?
A lot of it comes from, yeah, I read a lot.
Uh-huh.
I'm a bookworm when it comes to food. And that's basically, it's kind of stolen all other literature from me.
Sure.
So yeah. I read almost exclusively about food. So it can come from technique and applying technique to a different product that we have in season. or it can come, you know, just like some freak of nature. I think about a flavor profile and it strikes me like lightning, or something just happens. The biggest thing about it is, though, it's never forced. I never try to force myself to create a dish or a flavor profile, and it has to be somewhat fluid. And everybody needs to understand that, you know, chefs go through writer's block too.
Yeah, sure.
And you can taste an inspired dish versus an uninspired dish. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And when you do have to create on the dime, you know, you just resort back to the classics. You resort to what you do know, and the things that you have studied and practiced. And you use your foundation.
Right.
You know. But for the most part, I kind of take everything, you know. It starts with the season. It starts with what is available and what people should be eating. And from there, we'll build the flavor profile. And from there, we'll apply techniques to every one of those flavors.
Yeah. Hey, do me a favor. Explain to people listening who might not know, what is flavor profile?
A flavor profile is basically maybe a family or a grouping of flavors that are complementary to each other. So we'll say eggs.
Right.
Right now we'll say eggs.
Yeah, sure.
Eggs. I have morel mushrooms. I'm going to have asparagus tomorrow. Eggs, morels, delicious. Maybe a little bit of lemon in there. That'd be a flavor profile right there.
Right.
And then we would take that and we'd apply technique to them. So how are we going to cook the egg? What are we going to do to the asparagus? What are we going to do to the morels? And how are we going to introduce lemon to it?
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically just a grouping of different flavors that work or marry well together.
Sure. Well, then let's go a little bit further, because we haven't really talked to any of the chefs about this yet. So when you're creating a menu,
mm-hmm.
and you have, 12 items,
mm-hmm.
They all have the same flavor profile. Do you purposely try to vary that as much as you can, or do you don't care?
Well, yeah, as far as composing a menu, it is very much a composition in the sense that it is an intelligent endeavor to offer balance and different and varied things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it can't hit just one note.
Right.
You have to allow people to be able to enjoy different things. Of course, you're not going to have a whole entire menu of just meat.
Right.
Or just a whole menu, or there are actually seafood and meat places. Mm-hmm. Those are especially, yeah. You know. But I'd say overall, what we try to do, I think, is offer, you know, different flavors, different flavor profiles without them repeating as much as possible.
Sure.
And I'm not saying that, you know, cross-utilization is a terrible thing at all. You know, mm-hmm. we cross-utilize here and there. But for the most part, we try to keep the flavor profiles of each dish unique to themselves.
Right, right.
Just so it is a little bit more interesting.
Right. So, you know, because I think it's real interesting to people to understand that when they come out and they look at a menu at a place with a person like yourself or person like people like we interview on Chew the Fat,
mm-hmm.
these menus are not just thrown down on a piece of paper with the thought of, okay, well, I'm going to sell shrimp or whatever. People love shrimp. I think people should look a little deeper and see and mm-hmm. push people like yourself to say, wow, look how this menu is written. You know, I can have, you know, these whole different flavor profiles. I think it's something that that's interesting to folks.
Interesting, or what really interests me is, like, some people look at our menu and be like, this is really fascinating. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, this totally makes sense. It's not that out there, you know. We use a lot of vegetables. We're really big into vegetable cookery.
Sure.
And instead of hunkering down and using, you know, lots of starch and having heavy dishes,
mm-hmm.
we definitely like to introduce flavor through vegetables and having a lot of different varied flavor that way.
Right.
And I think some people aren't used to that. They're used to their, you know, their starch, their meat, and their, mm-hmm. you know, their veg.
Right.
You know, the old continental kind of,
yeah.
That's what it is. And that's not really how we look at it or how we cook, you know. We cook looking at the relationships of the ingredients and how they bounce off of each other.
Right.
And compose a great dish,
mm-hmm.
you know. And we look at texture, you know. And we want a little bit of, something rich, smooth, and velvety, and we want something that's crunchy, and then we want something that's, very satiating and succulent, you know. So it's trying to keep everything in balance, keep everything along the lines of good texture, and make it interesting at the same time.
Cool, cool. Let's change the subject just a little. You went to school in Florida.
Yes.
Right? To chef school. Tell us a little bit about that experience and what it did for you.
Well, I feel like you can just work in the industry. You just have to be very conscious of picking your mentors.
Sure.
And you have to want it. I feel like school is a good opportunity to kind of expedite your experience, but it's just like any other school. What you put in is what you get out.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really apply yourself and you push yourself, and that shows, your chef instructors will keep pushing you and expressing more interest in you, and you'll have a richer experience. And I have to say that I have absolutely no qualms. You know, like I came out absolutely happy, you know,
right,
with schooling. And if anybody, you know, does go to school, I'd say this is one thing I have to say is experience the industry before you spend all that money.
Right.
I cooked for about a year and a half before I decided this is what I wanted to really do and get into it. And like I said before, you know, I really fell in love with food and the discipline. I fell in love with the lifestyle. And I'd say everything after that, you know, you fall in love with certain parts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody out there, you know, thinking about, you know, the culinary arts or doing baking, international baking and pastry or hospitality management, you really need to go out there, experience it first, you know, make the right choice, and then go for it, you know.
I agree with you there.
Yeah.
I mean, you see how many chef schools are out there, how many people go into the chef school,
really,
and then within a few years, they're gone because they
wash.
It's
really getting washed up. And it's so funny because, I'd stay home like once a week. I was working full time and being a student full time. And the one day that I did have off, I was watching television one day. And, you know, they have The Young and the Restless on and all the soaps and stuff.
Right.
And during this 1 hour, they're also playing Le Cordon Bleu commercials.
Right.
You know, for all those people out there just sitting on their asses watching, you know.
I like those shows, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, watching the soaps, thinking about career changing or do something, you know.
Yeah,
like
sure.
It's a totally different world, you know. Like, it's a different set of rules, you know, working professionally in the food industry.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all this, you know, fluff. Totally isn't.
True. What is the, you know, if you're going to say, you know, you've already said to people listening who might want to be chefs that they ought to go out. What do you find the most challenging kind of aspect of your job?
Most challenging?
Right. Challenging mentally?
Yeah.
Physically? You know, what would you find the most challenging?
Well, so far my body's been pretty good to me. I've only thrown my back out once, and I got some nice shoes to fix my feet. I'd say mentally it is somewhat exhausting. Cooking professionally and being a chef isn't something that you go home and forget about. It stays with you. It's a, you know, you choose it as a lifestyle. It's involved completely.
Mm-hmm.
It will dictate your life personally and also professionally.
True.
It is it's a marriage. You know, it's not something, and it's in your, you know, it gets in your gut, and it's the fire in your belly. It gives you everything, and at the same time, it demands everything.
So do you find that, though, to be the most challenging aspect, or have you made peace with that part?
I think I made peace with that. I think the hardest part for me was actually getting over the actually being called a chef.
Yeah.
Because me, for the longest time, a chef was a mystical creature, you know, like that had, you know, knives as fingers and looked at food and it was 3 Michelin star.
Yeah, true.
So that was kind of a hard thing to get over. Me personally, I don't look at myself as being a chef or of that caliber yet, you know, and that's your personal battle day to day with yourself.
Right. How do you think you'll know? Like the day that Justin Hershey can say, I'm, hey, you know what? I think I'm a chef now. You know, I can call myself a chef. Look, we'll keep the word executive chef out of it because I always felt weird about that because I thought, well, you know, I should have myself a nice Samsonite briefcase and a suit. You know, hello, I'm executive chef. But, you know, I have other people say it's cool. They really like it. I like the word chef, I think.
Yeah, there's a ring to it.
I think it's a good word. And but how do you know when you'll feel like, you know, you've arrived?
I don't know. I don't know if I ever will. I mean, that's just being honest. I mean, I mean, it's a personal struggle that I guess you have with your good conscience and, you know, what you're putting out at the end of the day.
Sure.
I think as long as you stay hungry, point in a direction. I'd say, you know what it comes down to is a strong lineage.
Yeah.
If my boys in my kitchen, you know, turn out to be great chefs and exceed me in their careers, then I'd say, you know what, I was a good chef.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what it really comes down to.
I think it's good, though, that, you know, you look that way. I kind of always felt that way myself. I think that I remember when I first got in the business, seeing some chefs that were always cooking the same exact food. You know, this is in the 70s, everybody had escargots, bourguignon, clams casino.
Yeah.
They had chicken Kiev. They had, you know, whatever, trout all blue, whatever.
Basically the stuff that you do in culinary school.
Well, we'll talk about foundation in a second, but I always thought to myself, look, if I can't change to what's happening and stay relevant with the times, then and if I think I'm too good, then it's going to be not good. And I've always felt like this is a really humbling business. And
it's completely selfless. I mean, you battle with your – when you're young, you battle with your ego. And then you stomp it out. And then you understand that this is hospitality and it is selfless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you work your tail off. You give it your all, and you give it to somebody else to try to make them happy. And
true,
that's it.
True. Let me ask you now about this. You said something about foundation earlier in the in the interview, and I know when I read your bio, it was pretty clear that, you know, when you went to the school. Tell me the name of the school again.
Florida Culinary Institute.
Florida Culinary Institute. Yeah. That you had some old school chefs there.
Oh, yeah.
That were teaching. So how important do you think it is for young culinarians to really learn foundational cuisine?
It's everything. It's the cornerstone. I always believe, you know, you should respect your elders, you know. And seriously, like, I had a chef instructor. My first chef instructor, his name was Michael Barber, Chef Barber.
Mm-hmm.
He had cancer in his lymph nodes, and he shook like a leaf from all the medication that he took. He was probably like 75 years old, but he had years, so many years, it wasn't even funny. And I remember him picking up a knife, and I was like just sitting there like, this guy's going to cut his freaking finger off. It's over. He's trying to demo how to tourniquet a carrot or something.
Right.
And I was just like sitting there. And his muscle memory and everything was so strong about it that he made the most beautiful and absurd thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, I was just like, holy shit. You know, like, this guy's, you know, trembling. He's got DTs from all the medication that's pumping through his body. He's got cancer. He's a warrior. He's standing there in front of me, you know, after surgery, like, trying to show us how to 20 a carrot. How much does this mean to this guy? And how the hell did he just do that? You know, those people never leave you. And that old train of thought and that kind of pride is what everybody needs now.
Yeah.
You know? You need that.
So how important was your time at Stanton Grocery? How do you feel about the, you know, your chef there, and how the hell did you end up in Stanton?
Well, it's kind of funny. Like, my family relocated from Louisiana to Langley Air Force Base. We were stationed out of Barksdale, out of Shreveport-Bossier, and my uncle and my grandmother were living up in Northern Virginia, and we've always been somewhat of a tight-knit family. I always spent my summers with them. And when something went away, I always lived with them. So we were trying to get the family all together, and my stepfather at the time was trying to get orders to Langley. He got them. We moved to Langley. Parents got divorced. Family moves up to Northern Virginia with my grandmother and my uncle. And he was only there in Northern Virginia because he was doing his Pentagon tour.
Sure.
He was in the Strategic Air Command Air Force Intelligence. And he retired up there and really wanted to get out of the city, out of Nova. You know, he moved there in like 92.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time we moved, it was a zoo.
Yeah.
So he was just like, let's get out of here. Moved the family down to Storch Draft, which is just south of Stanton. Beautiful rural area, you know, lots of land, lots of room, fresh air.
Sure.
So we got down here and I did my senior year of school, went on. But anyways, my family lives here. So I came back after school. And he's getting up there in age. And when I was in school, I lost my grandmother. So the importance of family definitely overruled everything else. And I wanted to be close to my family. So I came here. And I heard about the Stanton Grocery. And it was a year in. He was, you know, fresh out of New York. He spent 10 years up in New York. Kind of comes from that old guard. Very intense, very passionate man.
Mm-hmm.
As a pressure cooker, but it was a hell of a time.
Yeah.
And, I mean, as far as his foundation of technique, it's absolutely solid. It's ridiculous. You know, there was no compromise there as far as quality.
Right.
It was either you're right or you're wrong.
Yeah.
And I really like that, you know. As militant and as harsh it sounds, you know, that's what it takes to me. You know, that's what really pushes me, you know. So as far as his influence, as far as Ian Bone's influence, it was huge on
me. Yeah. Well, he's got, you know, his great reputation, and I think he did a lot for that area, you know, when it came to cuisine, really.
Oh, he totally did. We were doing really well there while I was there. We were getting all kinds of write-ups and accolades, and it was a good thing. At the end of the day, sometimes the pressure gets to you. And I mean, I took that experience and I ran with it. You take the good and you take the bad.
Yeah, sure.
And then you make it your own.
Yeah, so now, how'd you end up over here at Zinc?
Well, it's kind of funny. I was trying to get my way over to Chicago.
So you took a drive to Charlottesville.
Yeah, no, I was trying to get my way to Chicago there for a hot minute. Still felt like I was young and I needed to go out. And I always loved Chicago. My family used to vacation there. We'd stay in Schaumburg and then actually go to a family reunion out in Racine. And it was a bunch of Swedes. And here I am, the darkest of the bunch, the shortest of the bunch. But anyways, I always loved Chicago and I really wanted to get out there. And I just needed a job to get me there. And I called them up and they had a job posted, called them up. And they hired me. And then I had this great opportunity there, and VU was expressing interest in, you know, going in a different direction and giving it to me. And I was like, you know, this could be really a great opportunity as far as my learning curve, you know, to really take on the full aspect as far as managing people and, you know, trying to build something. And I've talked about this already as far as constructing. Like, I've always wanted to kind of be my own man and build something. I wasn't a name chaser, you know.
Sure.
I've worked in some good places under some influential people, and I've seen some really good establishments and been inside of them, but I never wanted to be that guy.
Yeah.
I didn't want to chase names. I didn't want to be that guy that at the end of the day didn't know his name. I don't want to be Justin Hershey of Nabu.
Sure.
Justin Hershey of, you know.
Yeah.
I'd like to kind of have my own success. And, kind of go along this path.
Yeah, sure. So what do you think the future holds? What do you
for
hope?
Zinc? Oh, we're a baby.
Yeah.
You know, like, I finally gotten my building blocks, or I've got my staff together now, and they're still growing. I'd say they're about in second grade.
Yeah. They're going to love
but,
hearing that,
yeah,
aren't they?
They're getting there.
And, but they're getting all A's, right?
Yeah, exactly. They're about to graduate to third grade.
Nice.
But, you know, I started with people that were completely green. You know, I didn't want a set of bad habits. I didn't want ego. I didn't want some kid coming out of school asking me $16 an hour.
Yeah.
You know, a chef instructor told me he's going to be a chef
and
tell me that, you know.
I never heard that before.
Exactly. You know, it's sickening. So started with green people and, you know, we built them up. And I think I actually made a good choice. I hired a craftsman. It was a carpenter by trade as a young man, a bio major from LSU. So he's like my little, he connects the food and the science and has the whole mythology down and everything like that. The carpenter is like all about the skill and the craft, and then I got my donkey. He's just a horse. Yeah, love you, Christian.
Look, every kitchen needs that person.
Yeah.
And they're worth their weight in
he's
gold.
He's great. But we got that, and a lot of exciting things are coming. We're going to be reinvesting in the restaurant. Everything's going as planned, and I'm really excited for our future.
Well, it's a good location. It looks good, you know, and I think that's good. So you like Charlottesville? You're going to stick around for a while?
Actually, I love Charlottesville.
Yeah.
At first, you know, like, I came from Stanton, and really like downtown Stanton. It's a little too small for me, and I got over this side, and, you know, like, I've seen the kids' portion of the town. And
mm-hmm,
like that.
Sure.
It's just kind of like, eh. And now that I've been here, you know, I moved here, let's see, I've been here for a little bit over a year. I actually love it.
yeah
I really dig it.
It's the only place I've ever moved back to, and real thankful that I have. But if there's anything else you could say to people who are listening, what would it be? What would you say to all these listeners, 1 million people, I hope?
What do you think, Mike?
Okay,
what would I say? Let me see. I would say thank you. That's about it. Thanks for supporting us, everybody that's come through the restaurant. I think we have an excellent and bright future ahead of us, and I hope to keep seeing your faces, keep talking to you. Like I said, there is no pretension. We're just trying to give you the best service and best food we got.
Yeah.
And we just want to share that with everybody.
Cool.
Catch the fever.
Catch the fever. Listen, you've heard it here live on Chew the Fat. We want everybody to catch the zinc fever, and now you know Justin's heart. And when you come out to eat, you can take a look at the food, the people that are behind the line. You understand where they're coming from, and they actually understand the product that's on that plate, which is really cool. And so I appreciate that. Thanks for being with me tonight, Justin.
Absolutely.
And folks, you're listening to Chew the Fat, everybody's favorite chef talk podcast.
You're right.
And make sure you sound out, please. Let us know what you're thinking. Do you have a chef you'd like me to talk to? Do you have some questions you'd like to hear put in front of some chefs? And we have some exciting people coming up. We got a Top Chef All-Star we're going to be interviewing soon. This is you're hearing it first here, but we have a Top Chef All-Star. And it may not be your favorite one, that's for sure. But he's one of mine. And we have some folks that are in the trenches in New York City that we're going to be talking to soon. So it's all good. Listen to us at Seville Podcast. Of course, you're already on Seville Podcast probably if you are listening. But go to our blog too, chewfat.net. That's chewfat.net. And sound out. So thank you very much and good night.
I wasn't gonna sing the song tonight, or this decade, but I realized sometime earlier this year that it had been 26 years since this come out as a movie, and it was 2 years before that that it came out as a record, and it was 2 years ago on the record, which means it was like 30 Thanksgivings ago, 30 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I decided to go up and visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice didn't used to live in a restaurant. She used to live in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower, with her husband Ray and Facha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they used to have a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. Seeing as how they took out all of the pews and having all that room, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, found the place was filled with garbage, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the town dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction and headed on toward the town dump. We got there, and there was a sign, a chain across the road, and the sign said, closed on Thanksgiving. We had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And so with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset, looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one, till we come to a side road. And off of the side of the side road, there was a 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff, there was another pile of garbage. We decided that one big pile would be better than two little ones. And rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat. Went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning, when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage. Just wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obie. I cannot tell a lie."